Steve Bruce, it's odds on favourite to become manager of Newcastle. In my opinion, just a bit boring, if I'm honest.
Bit of a safe one.
Safe one. You know, I'm sick and tired of hearing that the same old managers get dragged up.
Maintenance is in here.
Yeah, maintenance. That's right.
Hello, maintenance.
You don't need to tell everybody.
Well, I thought I'd tell him. No. We're here for 4.5 hours.
They can't see him.
Well, they can't see him now. He's a lovely fella. I just
don't think that the same old situation of managers coming out is... There's got to be somebody new. Yeah. What about someone coming through the ranks? Like Fulham have ended up with Scott Parker, okay? They've gone with a younger manager that sort of knows the club, and maybe Newcastle should do that. Maybe they should look at that situation.
Yeah. You know? Well, talking about debates, there was a big debate last night on ITV.
So did you watch it?
I watched it. Yeah. I thought Johnson came out on top.
Did you? I mean, just... Before
quickly.
We say that,
yeah.
I mean, Boris Johnson, you know, I like Boris Johnson, if I'm honest, but he did do his old...
Yeah, of course he did.
And he got to a point where it was really quite strange for Julie Elling, because she couldn't
she
stop him...
She was very good, wasn't
she? She was very good, but she couldn't stop him talking.
No,
right?
Well, she couldn't stop them both talking.
No, I know, but Boris, I think, done a lot of that to avoid some questions.
Well, let's ask our expert... Body expert Judy James. Hello, Judy.
Hello, hi.
Did you watch it last night? Of course you did.
I was all over it. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Do you agree with me? Do you think Boris came out on top?
Actually, I'm fascinated by what you've just said, because it very much fits with who you decide would came out top. What they're doing is, we had two different forms of charisma. I used the word with a slight wince, but last night. Mm. And they were both different. It's how you make people feel that counts. And it was interesting that what they'd obviously done with you as well is that a certain style of charisma, which is what Boris has got, it tends to deactivate the logical side of the brain when it comes to evaluating decisions as to who's the best person and who's not.
That's a good point.
And we're won over by the limbic part of the brain, which has just got, in a way, it almost doesn't matter how he's answering the questions. I just feel that he would be the person to do the job at present. And you're right, he didn't answer many questions. No. When the big ones were thrown at him, he waffled his way through, or he was like a dredger going up to end. He wouldn't shut up. Probably people didn't like a lot of his answers, but I think he's appearing now as a magician. The arms are flailing, the big clunking fit, and it's as though this is somebody that might just pull the rabbit of Brexit out of the bag and do something magical that we don't really understand or know what that might look like.
Yeah, I mean, really, style over substance, right?
It is, to a certain extent. I know people always say, again with Boris, I have no bias here, that, you know, they say, oh, he's an intellectual guy. Again, what we see is somebody who is doing a load of verbal fillers and not able to complete a sentence. His body language is generally incongruent. It doesn't suit the words that he's saying. Mm. But when we see that, and he's often called a buffoon, a bit of a comedy turn, we often then look for the intellect, whereas when we see somebody who looks too clever, and I think Hillary Clinton suffered from this, we tend to look for the reverse and think maybe they're devious or a bit stupid.
Yeah, do you know, that's a good point there, Judy, that the fact that we are looking for a sort of a comedy line from him now and again, and, you know, because it's sort of, like you say, he's bumbling along. When he actually says something that's really intelligent and really clever, we actually go, oh, hang on a minute, he is good.
And that's why he tries to blind us with Latin. I mean, goodness knows I was taught Latin at school. Yeah. I never thought it would be any use at all in a career. But you're absolutely right, because he can say a few lines of Latin, because he can come out with a few words that people either didn't know or hadn't used in that context. Wow, you know, how clever. Send him out there.
I've said this on a number of sort of characters. It's slightly different. I'll say it back to my son. I said, you know, there's certain people that are really horrible all the time. You don't like them. You can't. And then when they suddenly do one nice thing to you, go, do you know what? He's not that bad.
Yeah,
is
that's
he?
Right.
Because it means so much more, because they do it so little.
Yes.
Isn't that just, it's such a difficult trait. My oldest friend that I grew up with, her mother was horrible, absolutely hatchet faced.
Yeah.
Horrible. And yet I remember once I went to stay there, and she kind of came and tucked me into bed, and I thought, oh, she's really maternal and lovely. And my lovely mum, you know, yeah, who's just, who was
does it every
always
night.
Loving.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
We do. We look for the good when we see a lot of bad in somebody. Well, cause I'm not comparing that to Boris. But
no,
yeah.
But it's a funny thing, because I said to my son, he said there's a coach that always sort of on the football field always shouts at him and has a go at him. And I said, but when he gives you one good thing, when he says, well done, mm-hmm. I said, yeah, it means a million times more than somebody keep telling you you're great all the time. I do look at Boris and I think he is faffing along a little bit and he's blah, 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 and he tries to get past it, because he's thinking, I actually think he's thinking of his answer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's even that bothered, really. I mean, it doesn't seem to be. Often you see people use a winding gesture when their brain's thinking really quickly, but their words haven't quite caught up. There doesn't seem to be any synchronisation with him. We're not seeing him searching in that way for the words that he's looking for. And the hands, in the meantime, are trying to do these hugely emphatic gestures as though some. And that's what Trump does. Yeah, do you remember what Trump? Yeah. Nothing much came out the mouth that was high intellect, but he did that pointing at the ceiling, that rounded finger gesture, and that was quite mesmerising for people in the end. I think
as with America, I think we've all just had enough of boring old people like Theresa May, and you know we want someone with a little bit of fire in them.
Well, in saying that, then Judy, what did you make of Jeremy Hunt's sort of body language? What did he sort of
boring?
Well, there you go. So that's
I thought he was boring, Judy.
But that, listen, that's the whole thing. I mean, we shouldn't really want our prime ministers to be an all singing, all dancing circus, should we?
No,
it
absolutely
doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No.
But you're absolutely right. It's as though we're now craving somebody with a bit of life and somebody that he makes you laugh when you look at. Why not then put, I don't know, all sorts of comedians up there instead? But yeah,
Michael McIntyre.
But he also bumbles, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, yeah.
And it's a comedy device. I mean, it makes the lines. It's good timing for the lines. But no, I completely get it. And unfortunately, people right now, they don't want to look at somebody logically and intellectually, and they're slightly boring with their body language. That, in a way, should be what we're looking for. Yeah. But no, let's go for the fun option. Let's go for somebody that, and I know that I'm going to love it, because you know, if he gets into number 10, everything that he does and everybody he meets.
Oh yeah, you won't
wow,
stop. You won't stop working, Judy. You won't stop working. Now, Judy, there is. You know, you mentioned about a comedian getting into. There is a president. There's a prime minister somewhere of some country.
A former comedian. You're
a former comedian.
It just
happened, it was like art imitating life.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I can't think what the country is, but you're right. It did happen last week, didn't it? Or something?
No. It was quite a few. I think it was about 6 months ago. But he's
but he's a character.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, he's a character. He was a comedian on the telly.
Yeah,
and he played the prime minister. That was it.
That's it. Yeah,
and then he actually
became the prime minister.
He used to be on the West Wing. He was
Martin Sheen.
It was Martin Sheen. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
It's like getting him as president, isn't it?
Did you ever watch a show called Borgen, which was a Danish series with a woman prime minister in Denmark?
No.
And if I want to look at people that would be the ideal leaders, it would be her. It would be Martin Sheen and Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
None of them exist in real life, but that's the kind of vibe that people are craving and looking for. Yeah.
And maybe Hugh Grant from Love Actually. we'd quite like him as well.
Just on that, Judy, just going back to some of the body language stuff, what you saw last night, did it... Was Boris, obviously, you said he using his hands quite a lot. Jeremy Hunt was much more controlled and, like we're saying, you know, for want of another word, boring. But did Boris sort of try to fill in all those gaps with some of his words to sort of, you know, when he gets asked a difficult question, he fills
he
in a lot.
He camouflages, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and he uses some very, very, very over-the-top... I mean, I said in the paper it was almost Shakespearean display. It was as though he was, you know, is it Henry V, I think, when he did that rallying the troops thing, and he was doing that with his gesticulation. I mean, we got 8 punches of the air, that great clunking fist that he's got. And that was just in his tiny introduction that he did. But it seemed as though, I have to say, what it looks as though he's doing is self-motivating rather than trying to it's as though he's trying to make himself, yeah, come on, Boris, get along with it. You know, think of something to say. Think of some Latin that will impress all these people.
With it, Jeremy Hunt said, you're peddling optimism. And Boris came back with, I am, you're a defeatist.
And that was, I have to say, I thought that may have been a good moment for Hunt, but of course it wasn't, because the one thing that people are clinging on to is any shred of optimism that everything might wonderfully be all right again. It was technically a good line, but that's what people are looking for in Boris. Just get on with it. We don't, you know. And I think this is the other thing about Boris's image, and it does compare a bit to Trump. When you look at the sort of hair and the... I mean, his hair went up like a cockatiel's last night. and the suit that doesn't quite fit, and the way he stood with his hands shut. We think, or people think, they're seeing integrity and honesty, because they think if he was a smoothie charmer, he wouldn't do all of that. So we're seeing the real deal, which is a huge mistake. I mean, I think people never realise that that can be a contrived look as well.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is the closing statement for both of them, it's strange that they gave it to Boris to get the last word.
Yeah.
And I would have said that his sort of closing statement was a lot more powerful, and it did sort of, you know, resurrect a little bit of hope than he did with Jeremy Hunt. So that's all I'd say. Just on that bus situation, I know that he's sort of come out and done this thing a few weeks ago about him painting buses. And do you think that was quite a controlled way of sort of, if you Google Boris and buses, you don't get the 350 million come up anymore, you get Boris painting buses? Was it a good deflection?
This is the thing with Boris, you never know. There's intellectual, and then there's sort of quite crafty in a way, and I think there's a mixture of both with him. You know, he's got that story about putting a dead cat on the table. You know that story? No, not a real dead cat. Have you heard this?
No.
He says when there's something really awful that you don't want to answer, you come up with a news story that is so enormous and often bad that at least it does deflect. And I think that might have been one of them.
Yeah.
And who knows with Boris? I keep looking every time I see Boris for the next dead cat. and sometimes they're so suicidal that you think, no, that can't be, but it probably could be. I mean, even arguments and things like that. I don't know.
Do you know what? That deflection thing is a really good thing. I had a mate that if you had a go at him, and my son does this, I said to my son, you're very clever at this. If you tell him off or tell him he's done something wrong, he doesn't defend himself, he attacks you.
Right.
He's, like, if you say, look at you, you've not done your shoelaces up, rather than him saying, Dad, I haven't had time, he'd go, well, look at your hair, it looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Boris has got that down with tea.
I mean, this is the classic stance when somebody says, have you been having an affair and cheating on me? Have you been looking at my phone?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Judy. I'm using that.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Just before you go, Judy, just listen, there's this news. Just wanted to ask you. Ryland Clark is going to come back or he's going to bring Supermarket Sweep back. Is there any game shows that you would like to see come back?
Oh,
I know you're on the spot.
Good question.
But is there a good one that you remember?
I had to do one. I had to participate in one the other day, and that was such a painful experience.
Was it?
I grew up liking the Golden Shot.
I said the Golden Shot earlier.
Yeah,
it was a great program with the master. Bob Monkhouse.
But who would you bring back? Who would be the host, Judy?
Oh, that's hard.
There's no other Bob Monkhouse.
There isn't.
They broke the mold with him, and it does need a smoothie like that, unfortunately.
He was the best, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think
with somebody like Bob Monkhouse, any show that he did was probably going to be absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Bob and Bruce. Bob and Bruce, Judy.
Yeah, Bruce. Yeah.
Play Your Cards Right. That was a great game. Play Your Cards Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to... listen, I want to bring back Bullseye. Here's what you would have won.
At the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, a little bit of bully.
Judy, thanks ever so much for your time. I messaged our producer last night. I said, we've got to get Judy on tomorrow because I was so keen to find out what you thought of their performances, and I think you've spelled it out exactly how we thought. Judy James there, body language expert and friend of the show.
Love sports.
I told you about my situation in Norway.
In Norway, yeah.
Okay, so I went away with Iron Maiden on their tour, went with the band, travelled on the Iron Maiden jet.
Of course you did.
Love it. Mm. And They've done a concert. They've done a couple of nights in Norway.
I've never been invited.
I don't think you have. No. No, it's a select...
I introduced them to you.
It's
you know.
A select few.
I was introduced you to them.
I was.
I should go on the plane.
I was. There's no cargo hold, right? I was playing in the West Ham celebrity team.
Yes.
And Stevie Harris from Iron Maiden invites me on the trips.
Who I invited? But I
go and play football there.
I know you do.
You don't play football.
No, I don't.
So anyway, we was in Oslo, which is a fantastic.
Yes.
Place. Got to say, it's an amazing place. Mm-hmm. And we finished the concert, mm-hmm. and we come out, a little bit backstage party afterwards.
Yeah, you know.
And we come out afterwards, and it was daylight.
Wow.
Half past 11 at night. Daylight.
Of course, like going to the warehouse back in the day.
Back in the day, yes.
Coming out at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Edmonton, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but this is what I felt. I actually thought something's gone wrong.
Yeah, you thought you'd missed it.
Because nobody had told me that it was daylight, okay?
Right.
And I came out and I said, oh, what's happened? It's like someone's forgot to turn the lights off.
So what, it stays light in Norway?
Well, for 69 days of the year, in Norway, the island of Sommerøy, the sun is set for 69 days in summer due to its location north of the Arctic Circle.
Wow.
And we're joined now by Kjell Veding, campaigner. Is leading the campaign to ban time.
To ban time. What a great campaign, Kjell.
Yes, we love it.
So where did the idea come from first? Hang on a minute, it's sunny 24 hours a day. Let's ban time.
Or is it that you just didn't have a watch?
You know, I haven't been wearing a watch for 6 years myself.
Yeah.
But you know, even up here in the middle of nowhere, we are, you know, a part of what everybody else are doing when they are sitting in the darkness. So my idea was to take focus back on the way we spend our time. And I have been working very, very hard 24/7 for 35 years. And last September, I said to myself, now it is enough. Life is too short. I have to do something more about it. And now, when I went out, I tried to be more carpe diem, you know, just grab the day and see why do the clock is taking all my schedules and making all my schedules. Even the neighbors, we have to contact them the day before and say, can you check if you are available tomorrow morning or tomorrow night? And that is crazy. So in September, I did it, and I have been having a much better life since that. And now when we are focused on the summer, together with Innovation Norway, we were asked, can you try to help people who are not living up here to tell them, try to tell them, how is it? How is our life? And, you know, Ben, I've always said time is the most valuable thing we could spend. And it's no other place where you could spend time the way that in the north, where we have 60, 70 days, as you said.
Kjell, are you not curious? Let's say halfway through the day, do you not say to yourself, I wonder what the time is?
Yeah, you know, if I need to know what day it is.
Yeah,
if I need to know the time, I have it on my mobile phone. If I need,
but
we always have to look down at on our wrist and say, oh, it's almost 2, it's almost 3, it's almost 4, and I say, so what?
Yeah,
you know, here you have 24/7, and when you are finished with the things you need to do by the clock, just put the clock away and say, oh, I'll make my day as the weather, the light, and everything is. The last week, every night, I have been far, far, far after midnight out playing, sitting in the sun, eating stockfish, and enjoying life.
I was going to say, Kjell, what about when your set meals are? So what do we have? We have breakfast at night now?
Yeah.
Do we have lunch as breakfast?
And what about your sleeping patterns?
What happens?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you
but
change
them? That is a good thing. You know, I have had people who have asked, when do you eat breakfast? And I said, that's the problem. You eat breakfast at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock. We eat breakfast when we are hungry.
Right.
Right. Okay. So it's not actually called breakfast, is it, really?
No, it's called...
It doesn't matter.
Do you have it when you wake up? There again, when do you go to sleep?
The last 4 days, we have had visitors in my home, and we have been eating, I don't know, several hours after midnight, and we don't know what to call the meal, but we were hungry and we were eating, and so then I wake up quite early in the morning because I get so much energy off the light when it's
light
now.
Hang on a second now, Keo, you just said the morning.
Morning, yeah.
What's the morning?
What's gone on there?
The morning is when you wake up.
When you
wake up.
So your morning could be like at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, you know, we've got you there, Keo.
We're
following the sun. Yeah, it is. It is funny because you know, when I wake up and I feel that, oh, yes, I'm ready for the day. Yesterday I was painting the ceiling of a house, and I didn't look at the watch.
Are you sure it was the ceiling at all?
Yeah. So you know, here I had my son coming. He's living in the south, in the darkness.
Okay.
He came up last night, and now he said,
"What time is it, Dad?"
Yeah. I don't know, but the sun is shining, and people are out. The kids are not following the clock, but. It is a freedom of life,
Can I ask you? Because it's fascinating to me that you know, you've got 24/7 in the sun.
Yeah.
So, what is the population of your island?
My small island here is about 300 people.
300 people, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's 300 people, and how many of that is children?
Oh, I think it's a lot of children here. It's the school and kindergarten here. I think it's almost 100 young people or kids or young people. Yeah, about
yes,
one third of the population.
And tell me, are they keen to do this still and not have any time? What about the schools?
Yeah. They are doing. Of course, they are going on schools. Of course.
So,
but
what would they
you
do?
Know,
the what, problem, would the, what would the schools do without time?
Yeah, you know, the schools, they still have time, and they still have.
Oh, they're ruining it.
The kids are ruining it.
But the kids are not ruining it because every evening here, the kids are out in their boats, and I will say that kids up here, they are staying out in the boats. Yeah. If they have done that in Oslo, the police have been there several hours before.
Yeah. What do you mean, sorry,
he's on an island, so they've gone out in their boats.
They've gone out in their boats.
Yeah. It's a bit like the winners of Bullseye. Yeah. They go out in their boats that they won in Sheffield.
It's not like that. Yeah. It's fascinating to me. It's a completely different...
Do you know what you asked in the break, John, that we should ask Kiel, is how do you go to sleep? Do you have to sort of blackout blinds?
Yeah.
How do you get the darkness?
That is a good question, because we have people who come here where we have to put something over their eyes, because it's quite
sounds a bit odd,
amazing to go to sleep, because it isn't dark, and we have dark curtains also, but sometimes it isn't dark enough, and when you know, in the middle of the night the sun is shining, and people get a little, you know, I don't know, in their heads, how on earth, when they come to the airport of Tromsø, they, in the middle of the night, they say, like I heard you said, it is crazy. Mm. And then they spoke to the locals and they say, nothing is special, it's just normal.
Yeah.
And then after a day or two, you are one of the locals.
Yeah, you sort of feed into it. What about the winter? Is it dark 24 hours?
Yeah, the winter, it isn't totally dark. You know, it's very popular also for people from England to visit us and in the winter time, because when I grew up, the winter time was the dark period, and we have to go to Canary Island once during the winter to survive.
Yeah.
And people who came up here, they bought some lamps, some lights to surviving. And that is the way we have been taught, that the dark period is a very, very rough period. But then tourists start to come here and said, oh, it isn't that dark. Mm. You have the aurora, you have the...
I was going to say that. Do you see the northern lights? Do you get the northern lights up there?
Of course.
Really?
We see the northern lights when it gets dark. You know, from the 25th of August, we start to get dark nights.
Okay.
And then we could see the aurora every clear night. Wow. until beginning of March.
How dark does it get, Keo? Does it get properly dark? Or?
Yeah, because the darkest period is in December. In December, we have about 2 hours with normal daylight.
Oh, really? Well, okay.
It's not a lot, is it?
And when I grew up, this village and a lot of other villages here, we had siesta the whole year. Every day we had siesta, 1 or 2 hours in the day. Mm. And that is also because in the winter time, people meant it was important for us to have the possibility. We stopped school, we stopped work in the middle of the day when I grew up.
Right.
Because then we had the possibility to see daylight 2 hours.
Wow. Do you know what? As I said, I've been to Oslo a few times with the rock band Iron Maiden, and I think it's an amazing place. I've done that sort of boat trip off the south of it, yep, around all the islands. Is it a similar sort of vibe there to what your island is? The people pretty much the same, or is it the fact that you're up the north and you're a bit isolated? Is there any nightclubs up there?
You know. You should take Iron Maiden to Tromsø.
Really?
Because then you will have a midnight concert with great music in the midnight sun.
Yeah. Okay.
So that is something.
Of course you've got a police force and what's what is the crime like of it? Is it virtually nothing?
It is not much crime.
Right.
In the city of Tromsø, we belong to the city of Tromsø. We are about 55 kilometers from the center of Tromsø. And in the center of Tromsø, we have 76,000 people. And what you could remember is that 76,000 people in Tromsø, but a lot of people come from all over the world to study at the University of Tromsø. Yeah. But they don't want to go home. So at the moment, we have 143 nations living in Tromsø because they don't want to go home.
Wow.
So that is a little bit dangerous to come to the north. You don't want to go home.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, Kiel, you may have another two this week. Me and Johnny may pop over there.
We might not come back.
We might not come back.
And if Iron Maiden come to Tromsø, oh boy, we will be there.
Well, listen, they love it. I know they play the Scandi countries. They absolutely love it, and they're huge in those countries.
Yeah.
Kiel, fascinating subject.
Fascinating.
And I wish you luck with getting everybody...
Your campaign to ban time.
Getting everybody to throw their watches away.
Yeah.
Kiel Vedding there, campaign leader for ban the time.
Let's ban time.
This is Love Sport.
Obviously, we're talking about Meghan Markle today and the fact that she wore jeans to Wimbledon and told people you're not allowed to take photos of me.
Yeah.
We're asking you, 0208 70 2558, send us a message. You're getting a few messages. They're all of the same ilk.
Yeah.
She's not really...
She's not popular.
She's not really, you know, liked.
She's not endeared herself.
No, but she could have done. It was a good opportunity.
Of course she could have done.
Yeah, anyway, there you go.
She could have done when she could have gone and seen her dad.
All right,
when he
get
was
off
ill.
The dad situation.
Why?
Let's get back to... Listen, Wimbledon was a good opportunity for her to actually get there without Harry and say, listen, I'm on my own here. I haven't got to do curtsies and bows and you curtsy to her or whatever. But I haven't got to do all the formalities.
I wouldn't curtsy to her.
Of course you wouldn't. Like you said earlier, you can't bend down.
Oh, yeah.
It's very hard for you. Bit of boxing, John.
Yeah.
We love a bit of boxing.
Absolutely.
What are you fighting at the moment? What's your weight?
I'm a bit of a, you know.
What?
I'm a middleweight.
You're a middleweight?
Yeah.
You are a super.
Super middleweight.
Heavyweight.
Yeah.
Super heavyweight.
I am heavyweight.
You're in,
I'm like him. What's his name? Who beat
Yeah, the Butterbean. All right.
What's his name?
Ruiz.
Ruiz.
Yeah.
I'm Ruiz.
Yeah, you are.
I'm Ruiz, mate.
Yeah. Yes, that is. Yeah.
Don't underestimate the looks.
You're tank weight.
Don't
crane weight. Listen, we were talking about Dillian White the other day, strangely enough, yeah. And Charlie Duffield is going to fight Dan Aziz. They'll clash for the vacant Southern Area light heavyweight title on the Dillian White card. And we're joined now by none other than himself, Charlie Duffield. How are you, Charlie?
I'm very well, thank you, my friend.
Good. That's good. Good. You're nice and fit, Charlie. Ready for it?
Yes, all the hard work is pretty much done, dusted, just sparring over. So, ready for a fight like that.
So, take us through a typical day, Charlie, of training. What does it entail?
Down in Loughborough is obviously completely different to what I would do. My schedule would be at home, but we've been doing, you normally start off Monday track work.
Yeah.
Normally like 10 to 12, sometimes finishes a little bit earlier. And then 2 till half 3, 4, we have strength. And then 7 o'clock, we have sparring and pads and stuff like that.
Well, it's a long day. Yeah. I mean, listen, if I was a boxer, which I never will be in a...
No.
I don't think... I'm just not built for it, Charlie.
You're a good weightlifter,
you know what I'd have in the background if I was training? You know what you'd have in the background.
You'd have Rocky. Yeah. Yeah.
You'd have Rocky. Yeah. Oh, the Tiger. Does that go on, Charlie?
the Rocky
theme. Do we still use that, Charlie?
It's pretty much planned in your head 24/7 when you're training the way we are.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's great. Just listen, obviously, you're known as a big puncher. Mm. Majority of your wins have come from TKO. Have you gone any long distances, Charlie, to sort of see where the stamina is?
My last fight was the only one that I didn't that went to distance, but it was only a 4-rounder.
Okay.
But it was meant to be an 8-rounder, scheduled for an 8, and then they changed it for a 6, and then because of obviously TV rights and stuff, it went down to a 4.
Okay.
And I only knew that when I was in the ring. I didn't actually.
Really?
I thought I was doing a 6-rounder. I knew they changed from an 8 to a 6. And then when I was in the ring, they said 4 rounds. I was like,
wow.
I'm not really a 4-round fighter. It takes me a couple of hours to warm into it.
It's like us when we got in this morning. We thought we were only doing 2 hours and we're doing 4.5 hours. Charlie, listen, it's a bit awkward, isn't it? Your opponent's trainer was your former trainer, amateur level. Does that put you at a bit of a disadvantage?
No, not really. A lot of people have asked that question, and I've come on leaps and bounds since my amateur pedigree. So
you're a different animal now, if you pardon the expression.
I'm a complete different animal now. Yeah.
Where did you fight as an amateur?
I only ever fought at West Ham.
Did you? Oh, there you go.
Good lad. So you didn't fight out of Repton then?
No, my dad actually mentioned one a few years before I give up as an amateur. I said, why don't you try Repton and stuff? I said, no. I'm a West Ham fan. I just had strong loyalties towards West Ham, and they were doing good for me. Do you know what I mean? I lost a handful of fights out of loads of fights. So I was doing good. But I think my dad is a West Ham fan himself, but the only reason why he said about Repton, I think they had a more of...
reputable, yeah. Yeah,
Older. There was a lot more older groups and stuff like that. So that's the only reason why he said, why don't you... Now you're a senior. When I went back from the senior, why don't you try Repton? Because I think they had a better senior background rather than when I was a small kid. West Ham had loads, so we were competing loads.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some, you know, I'm a West Ham fan, and we've had some wonderful fighters over the years. A lot of them are footballers. A lot of them are in the stand, yeah. But no, we've had some wonderful fighters over the years,
yeah.
And I love it when they sort of go. By the way, do you wear claret and blue shorts?
I don't wear claret and blue.
Okay.
You know what? I said to my missus, that was my first option, yeah, claret and blue shorts.
Well, it's a good market employ, isn't it? You get a lot more fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she went, no, I know you're West Ham, you're through and through. You don't need to show everyone that you're West Ham. So my shorts are actually black, and one of them's got black and red.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Tyson.
Tyson was black.
Tyson
right?
didn't do bad.
I've got the Hammer sign on my leg. So
there you go.
That's good enough.
Tyson wore those black boots, the black shorts, black ties, and he just looked mean.
He did look mean.
I do love to see a bit of Claren Blue. Listen, your opponent, Aziz, What's his background, and where can he cause you a bit of danger, or what have you looked out for in watching some videos of him or stuff?
He's like very athletic. He's got a good engine and stuff. The only problems that I have in the ring that anyone could cause me, not just Dan Aziz, is the marking up. I've got high cheekbones, so I mark up pretty easy.
Do
so
you?
I've been learning to move my head more, so hopefully I won't take as many shots.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only problem I have is the marking up. Literally, like, I've got a very good chin. I'm strong. I'm a forward fighter. He's a forward fighter, so it should be a great, great fight. But yeah, it's just the marking up. But obviously, I'm vulnerable for marking up easy. So
yeah. Model looks, high
yes.
cheekbones.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's wrong trade.
Charlie, listen. You know, on a serious note, I mean, you're a big mental health campaigner, and I mean, has boxing really helped you? You know, with your struggles with that.
Boxing has been my lifesaver, definitely. Without my, like I said, I always mention, without my beautiful wife, she's done so much for me and kept me on a straight and narrow. But boxing has literally been my cure from my demons and stuff like that, because I just feel like it puts your mind somewhere else and you focus on one thing. Like, you're getting that, like, now all I'm focused on is Dan Aziz, July the 20th, getting in the ring, doing what I do best and pushing on. So, yeah boxing for anyone who's suffering from any sort of mental problems, whether it's depression, whether it's gambling, whether it's drinking, drug, anything like that, I just think it's a lifesaver, definitely.
You went through a bad time in your life a couple of years ago. Your brother sadly took his life. Is that, obviously, has that sort of spurred you on, you know, mentally? Obviously, it would really turn you inside out, wouldn't it? I can't imagine what you've gone through.
Yeah.
But has the boxing helped you sort of, you know, not get over it, but, you know, helped you with it, coping with it?
Yeah, massively. Like, it's like I say, it's, boxing's been my everything now. I never used to take boxing seriously. Like, when I had my first few fights, even though I won them by knockout, I wasn't taking it seriously. So it was just like, I always used to mention it as like a walk in the park with a dog. But now I'm taking it seriously. And losing my brother definitely gives me more of a drive, because he always believed in me and how far I could go. So it just gives me that extra drive to say, do you know what? I'll prove to you guys that I can do it. And what you did say years ago, I'm gonna put them right for him. And for my family, obviously, do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, sure.
Yeah, definitely. Boxing's been everything.
Do you know what, Charlie? It's a quite an odd one, because myself and Johnny Sperling here sung at quite a few boxing events over the years.
Mm.
And one event that we did sing at, Darren Barker, who went on to become world champion, I think, and his brother was fighting that night, I think, and his brother left that night to drive up to see his girlfriend, and sadly fell asleep at the wheel and crashed and died. And I know that Darren Barker would suffered quite badly for some sort of time. He wanted to give up boxing, but it was the training and the sort of focus in his mind that got him back in there, and sort of, you know, the sad times he'd followed on from his brother, but it actually fought him to get to the top.
Well, what do you think when we think about boxing? I mean, the fight, the main fight, is only just one little part of it, really.
Yes,
there's so much more.
That you've
the training, the social part of it.
Yeah,
you know, it's all.
I suppose the training and your schedule helps you, doesn't it?
Of course.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, I know Darren really well.
Yeah,
I'm really close with Darren.
Oh, well, send him our love, won't you? Because I did do the music for him to come out to one of the fights about 5 or 6 years ago, because I'm good friends with Tony Sims, and Tony asked me to do it for him, and I haven't seen Darren for a long while, but please send him our love, won't you?
No, I will do. And so going back with Darren, I knew Gary, because I used to box in the amateurs with Gary. We were boxing in the same, obviously with different weight category, but within the same, like, the NABCs and stuff like that. I knew Gary really well, but and what a fighter he was.
So, yes.
Yeah, it just goes to show that it gives Darren that drive, that
it
extra
did.
that extra push to become a champion and become a world champion.
Without a doubt. Just very quickly before we go to break, but I just want to ask you about Dillian White. You're on the undercard for that fight. Is he looking, do we know he's looking in good shape?
Yeah, Dillian is looking in tremendous shape. He's fast, he's sharp, he's trained hard. Well, I've trained exactly the same as him. We've been doing the same work. He's looking like a machine.
Wow.
So come July the 20th, I can see a triple treble, me, Richard, and Dill.
Ah, love it. Well done. Listen, we wish you all the luck, really do, and hope that everything comes good for you. Wish you luck in that fight. Charlie Duffield there is fighting Dan Aziz on the undercard of the Dillian White program.
What a lovely fella,
lovely man, and I just you know, that is dedication. Boxing is dedication, and the fact that that's got him through, you know, some real sort of tough times.
Yeah,
Do you know what? We're going to link this up to something that's happened. Obviously, you don't watch Love Island, John.
No, but I've read the story this morning.
Okay, and they go through a little bit this on Love Island, you know. It is a bit of a strange one, and there is a bit of some mental health issues.
But it is self, you know, brought
okay,
on.
Okay, you brought on there.
You brought it on yourself.
I agree,
surely.
I agree. But it is...
You haven't gone kicking and screaming, have you?
No, but you're in this box, if you like. It's a nice box, but you're in there for a good period of time.
Yeah.
And it can play tricks with your mind.
I'm sure it
and
does.
And people are up and down.
Yeah.
And I just think... You know, some of it. Listen, there was a girl on there last night. She sort of coupled up this guy, okay, Pritchard, the dancer's brother.
Oh yeah.
And she's really fallen in love with him, and it all looked great. They were like absolutely lovely couple.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he's decided that she's not for him.
Yeah.
And it has absolutely broke her heart.
He's decided that we'll make good telly if I.
I don't think he did, John. I don't think he did. But it's broke her heart, and you can see that there's a real struggle with her.
Yeah.
You know? And listen, if I was that that girl's dad, I would be telling them to get off the show, which she did last night. She walked off the show because it was breaking her mentally.
Love sports.
Listen, we're going to move on to some of these wacky stories. It's time for...
Wacky Stories!
Bell and Sperling's...
Wacky Stories.
Serge Aurier, I can't say his name. Serge Aurier injured his wrist at halftime of Ivory Coast win over Mali after banging his fist on the table. Right now, things like this do happen. Okay, Serge he missed the Ivory Coast win over Mali due to an ankle injury, but he injured his wrist during a frank exchange of views at halftime. Expects to be fit for the quarterfinal against Algeria on Thursday. Now, the fact is, that's quite funny, wasn't it? He injured his ankle, okay?
Yeah.
But then he has a bit of a row with somebody at halftime.
Yeah.
Bangs his fist on the table and virtually breaks his wrist.
Oh.
And now he can't play.
Now he can't play.
There you go. What you got? Ethiopian runner, John?
Yeah, Ethiopian runner thinks he's won a 5,000-metre race and celebrates towards the crowd before realising... There's another lap to go.
Do you remember that? It's a fantastic lap. I've won it! It's true, yeah. He's leading.
Did you see it?
I did. It was really embarrassing. It was in the Diamond League, mate. He was leading the 5,000-metre men's race. He began celebrating the victory in Lausanne. However, there was another lap to go, and he eventually... Watch out. Where did he finish, right? 10th.
Oh, you silly sausage. Oh, that's brilliant.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Just listen, I'll tell
that's
you what.
That's a great one there, Ben.
It's almost like the Bayern Munich team celebrating in the Champions League against Man United 20 years ago.
Not quite as bad as that, though.
Okay.
I mean,
it's not as funny. He's on his own.
He's
come through the line. Hey, look at me, everyone, waving his hands.
Let's go past him.
So the fact is, Johnny Sperling is waving his hands as if people in radio world could see him. He's waving his hands to the crowd.
I'm just doing it for my own benefit.
And everybody's overtaken.
That's a brilliant story.
I love the fact that he come 10th. He's trying to catch... Hang on! Wait a minute! I'll be there in a sec!
He's trying
to... It's like a Benny Hill scene, isn't it?
Oh.
He's trying to catch him up. He's ended up coming 10th. There you go.
Imagine his coach is probably going, no! No!
You've not won
no,
it.
No, you had won it. You've got another lap, you Burke!
You Burke. What a stupid name, Burke.
I love Burke.
Here's one.
Inoffensive.
It is inoffensive. Forest Green Rovers, recognised by FIFA and UEFA as the world's greatest football club. The world's greenest football club.
Yeah, you said greatest, didn't you? You need your glasses,
Do you think so? The world's greenest football club.
Yeah.
Now, the fact is, okay, they've got they're the world's only vegan football club. The world's first carbon-neutral sports club, and now oh, I'm not having this. The world's first bamboo football kit.
What, a football kit made of bamboo?
What has gone on?
The old bamboo. You better never bother with the old bamboo.
Oh, stop
be
off.
Yet up the
stop
shoe.
It.
You must know Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, but it's 300 years ago. We've got to play Stormzy here.
And listen, everybody knows Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Do the Stormzy version of the bamboo.
Little bamboo...
Yeah, see, that's far better.
How about Lewis Hamilton?
Go on.
He's a bit of a big head, isn't he?
He's a big head, John, because he wins every week.
He does.
Right? He's pretty good in a racing car.
He was forced to queue up for a plane with the public after selling his $25 million private jet.
Yeah.
He was heading home on a normal flight after going on holiday. Hamilton's beloved bulldog, Coco, was a regular passenger on his old jet before he sold it. And the British F1 star reportedly had an argument with his former aircraft pilot after he found out Hamilton's dog had pooped in the driver's private toilet.
I'm not having it. I'm not having the fact.
Surely.
So wait a minute. The fact is, if you are Lewis Hamilton and you are swimming in money, absolutely swimming
I'm
in
swimming
money,
in
right?
It. Yeah.
25 million.
You're drowning it.
25 million for a jet is nothing.
No.
Right, okay? It's in the back of the van.
It's back of the van stuff, right? Isn't it?
That money, open the back doors up.
Yeah,
there it is.
How much
How much that jet, son? 25 million.
Oh,
here.
Back in fact, it's in the side pocket.
It's in the glove compartment.
In the glove compartment, yeah.
Take that. It's nothing to him. So why sell your jet so that you've got to travel with all the likes of us, all the council house kids, right? You don't want to be getting on a plane and turning right.
Takes me to my Lionel Blair story.
Go on.
Now, you wouldn't, you know, you just would not. But if you was Lionel Blair and you wanted, you know, you didn't want to mix with the public, oh dear no.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't get on
Tell me what happened when you got on the plane with Lionel Blair.
Got on the plane with Lionel Blair, right? We're going to Spain. I'm 17 years old. Lionel Blair's very popular with Give Us a Clue and all that.
Yeah.
So Lionel Blair's sitting in front of me. And there's two elderly people sitting next to him. So me and my mate Steve, we're waiting to go to Spain. Oh, look, it's Lionel Blair. Look, there he is.
Yeah.
And even this old fella and his wife, they're looking at
Lionel.
Realising they're next to Lionel Blair.
Oh, yeah. Give us a clue.
You know, the fella gives a clue. Yeah. So Lionel's in the, in the window seat.
Okay.
Fella's in the middle. He's thinking, well, there's my chance.
Yep.
I'm next to Lionel Blair.
Yeah.
In the old days, of course, no selfies.
No.
So you ask for their autograph.
Of course.
So he said, you could see him plucking up the courage. You know?
Yeah.
And he said, excuse me, Mr. Blair, but would you mind signing this, please? Would you mind signing it? And Lionel just turns around to him and goes, oh, no, I always get this. I'm on holiday. Whole plane can hear him.
Do Lionel again.
Oh, no, I always get this. I'm on holiday.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Ben and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.